show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Kind of a special show today. It's just me to start off with here at the beginning of the show, because we're going to start off right with an interview today with currently general manager of the Northwest Arkansas Naturals, Eric Edelstein. And Eric, it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing right now for you, because you're on your way to Reno. You're making the move to AAA. And is it the same? I guess I should ask you to start off, for those that haven't heard the news or maybe don't know much about you. The move to Reno, are you the general manager of the Reno Aces, or what does that job consist of now?
I'll actually be moving to Reno in June, and the position I've accepted is executive vice president, chief operating officer. So it actually sits above the general manager as far as the hierarchy goes. But it's a very similar type of position to what I am with the Naturals. It's just it's a bigger team, more staff, more fans, just a larger operation in general.
And for people that may not understand, because this is a baseball show, so that we don't confuse things, when we refer to general managers like Dayton Moore, they have control over players and stuff like that. General manager in a minor league aspect is more of a business manager, what you would think of with at your local store, whatever it might be, it would be the same kind of general manager there. Is that a good way to put it, Eric?
Exactly.
Or how would you describe what you've been doing?
No, I think that's exactly it. I mean, ultimately, it is still baseball, so there's an aspect of baseball to it. There's a relationship that has to be maintained with your major league team, with your coaching staff and with your players. But my day-to-day responsibilities do revolve around the ballpark itself, RVS Ballpark, and the community in Northwest Arkansas, and the sales and marketing and game operations, and taking care of the facility and all of those things as they relate to the game itself. So I'm not evaluating talent. I'm not necessarily I don't have anything to do with as far as trading guys or calling guys up or anything like that. But I'm certainly around it all the time.
Well, and let's just stay there for a second. You obviously have to deal with the big league club on a regular basis. How often do you when in this position you were in, how often would you hear from the big league club and they would say to you, hey, we've got these guys at Northwest Arkansas right now, and we need them to do this, or this? Jake Odorizzi is there. We need him to pitch on Thursday because there's a chance we might be sending him to AAA, 5 days later. Did you get a lot of that, or how much involvement did you get from the big league club?
That's something that really happens through our manager. Brian Polberg is the one who fields those calls as far as the specifics, and he's the one with the mandates as far as when a pitcher is going to pitch, or how many days a week a player needs to play, or whether or not we're going to play a player at multiple positions, in order to kind of broaden his skill set. So Polly's the one who really takes that on day to day. Where our relationship comes in, it's related to the physical call up. And making sure that a guy gets to where he needs to go to, make sure that the next guy coming in is taken care of. We take care of hotel rooms when the guys get into town. It's a little more administrative as far as that goes. But the relationship's important from the standpoint of the field, the field conditions itself, making sure that the players have a great place to play, the clubhouse conditions, the travel from city to city. We're taking care of of the Royals' assets all year long. So it is very important that we're on the same page. And really, the person I probably have the most contact with, other than Brian Polberg, is going to be Scott Sharp. and you know anything from the minor league farm director position is going to relate most directly to us. And from there, you know, JJ is probably the next most, you know, JJ Piccolo is probably the next most person that we talk to. But ultimately, anybody who's anybody in the Royals front office is going to come through at some point. So we've got great relationships with all those people, and that's a tough thing to leave because there's some great people in this organization.
JJ is a friend of the program as well, and absolutely fantastic person. I can't say enough good things about him. And I actually ran when I went to a game at Northwest Arkansas. I guess that was last year or the year before. Ran into JJ there and sat down and talked to him for a little bit while he was, you know, doing his job scouting and what have you of the team. And so I definitely see that environment where you would see the guys from the pro level come down and say hello. And then also. The Glasses own a suite there in Northwest Arkansas, don't they?
That's right. I mean, that was one of the first calls I made when I had made the decision I was going to leave was to Mr. Glass to let him know. You know, Mr. Glass owns a suite here. You know, he has an office in Bentonville, about 20 minutes north of the ballpark. He has been an incredible just friend of the team, mentor for myself. I can't say enough about the amount of time that he's given me over my time in Northwest Arkansas, and guidance, and really, really just been a tremendous asset to the team and to me personally. And I look forward to keeping that relationship and you know keeping in touch with him afterwards. He wished me well. You know, after he muttered some frustrations over me leaving, but he understood and certainly did wish me well.
You know, and I was looking here, and I couldn't find it today. I was a little behind on prepping for this, but I was looking. I know you were the executive of the year for the Texas League, but weren't you also Royals executive of the year 1 year, or didn't you win some sort of award at one of the award dinners
for
the organization?
That's right. 2011, the Royals named me their minor league affiliate employee of the year. So they recognize one person from all their minor league affiliates each year. They recognize one person as their sort of affiliate employee of the year. And yes, I did win that in 2011.
Well, you know, and this is a little more on a personal level. We've been doing this show for a little over 2 years now, and we look back to when we were in the studio there, and one of the first people that we had on our shows was you. So first off, let us say thank you to you for being somebody that's been involved with this piddly-dink little podcast for the past 2 years. And honestly, we should have had you on more times than we did, but it's just the show got rolling real well for a while, and we, you know, it's hard to find times, and you're a busy guy with you know, managing what you do for Northwest Arkansas. And, let's think back to your time with Wichita and with Northwest Arkansas. If people don't know, you actually were with the Wichita team before they moved to Northwest Arkansas and kind of made the move with the minor league club at that point. When you think back through your years with these clubs, you've had some amazing players that have come through. Many or most, you could even say, that are with the Major League Club today or on the 40-man roster. When you think back about your time with the Royals organization, what players were you the most excited that you got to see as part of your time in Northwest?
I think going back to Wichita, our 2006 Wichita Wrangler team, and I don't know how we didn't win the league that year, but, Zach Greinke was in that rotation. And Alex Gordon, Billy Butler, and Mitch Meyer were all in that lineup. And that was just an unbelievable team. Alex Gordon was, until I saw Mike Trout play in the Texas League, Alex Gordon was hands down the best player that I had seen in the Texas League, over my time over the last 10 years. And having him on the team and seeing how hard he worked and how much he cared, I know I was I've been a vocal proponent of Alex Gordon even through his struggles, because you just saw it in him and you knew he was going to turn out to be a great major leaguer, which he now has. So definitely Alex Gordon. And then you can't say enough about what Mike Moustakas did in his short time with the Naturals. I mean, he absolutely lit this town up. People heard about him. They knew he was coming. We were excited to see him. He hit home runs on his first two swings at our ballpark, and just went on a pace. I think he had over 400 at home during his time that he was here. Nobody would even pitch to him. You knew when he was getting walked in the fourth inning that he wouldn't be around very long, and that's what was happening. No one would even touch him. So those guys, Gordon and Moustakas, were the two most exciting day in, day out guys. And then Eric Hosmer during the playoff run in 2010, without him we don't win the Texas League that year. Plain and simple. Guy was cool as could be in some huge situations and got some big hits for us.
You've definitely had some great times. I assume your best memory in Northwest Arkansas was winning the title there.
It's certainly very high up there. That was an emotional night, and as much unbridled joy as you can have in a day is the release after that last out is made, and knowing that those guys had done the job. And it was incredible just to kind of be off to the side and watch that and enjoy that night. That was a really fun, special night.
Let's move to this year. And one of my guys, I know you don't necessarily work with the players day to day, but one of my guys wanted to ask you just your simple opinions on a few of the guys that are currently down in Northwest Arkansas. I guess we'll start with the biggest name, in my opinion, that's down there. Ventura's down there. This is a guy that a lot of people think could be in the big leagues by the end of this year. When you've seen him pitch, what do you think of him? I mean, what kind of comparisons have you made to him? Or does this guy have the stuff to be a number three, number four starter in the major leagues, or even better than that?
Yes. Yes, he absolutely does. His last two starts have been, it's been laughable how much he's been above the competition. The last two starts, he's been able to throw three pitches for strikes, which I think everybody, I know people had talked about, that he might be more of a reliever, which I think is how everybody casts the hard throwers, is that they're going to be, back of the bullpen guys. But he's throwing three pitches for strikes at will. What is even better is to see some of the swings that are getting taken off of him. They are so incredibly bad because guys are just guessing and hoping, and they just have no chance against him right now. So I would think he would be moving up shortly, and no doubt in my mind that he could help the big league club this season.
And then the other one was a guy that I actually saw pitch when I was down there for the game that I attended, and that's Noel Arguez. This guy, he had some injury issues. People that have followed the minor leagues know that he had that shoulder issue that prevented him in 2010, and he had surgery in that year. He's never seemed to really kind of get it. I mean, in your opinion, is this a guy that's going to be able to get it together, or is he just going to be somebody that was – that ends up being one of the many players that have all the high hopes and then they get into the minor league system and they don't quite ever make it out?
I wouldn't give up on him yet. If you'd talked to me in August, I probably wouldn't have said to give up on him, but I would have had a more calculated answer. I really do. You see something in him. You can see it when you watch him. He's a big, strong kid. When he's going, he's hitting in the low 90s. He can pitch. He can. My biggest concern for him is his demeanor. I would love to just see him get aggressive. And I think that when things go against him, he has a tendency to slow his pace. And he doesn't get back up on the mound and throw. And I see that happen to him. When something goes wrong, it can spiral. And that's obviously the mark of a great pitcher, is can you get yourself out of trouble? And I know Jim Brower is working with him. Jim's excited about the opportunity to work with him. He understands how much is at stake with him. I actually talked to Jim about him yesterday, and, Jim thinks that there's something that can be made out of this kid. He really does.
Before I ask about the next player, we'll kind of take this on a right turn real quick. But for people that don't know, they can follow you on Twitter at Eric Baseball, and then you're currently also running the at NWA Naturals account. Obviously, that'll be changing here shortly for you. Being a part of Twitter and being able to interact with people always seems that you've been really involved with. Did you ever find yourself interacting with players that are currently on the team or that were on the team?
Yeah, I think we have. Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely feel like we've, it's fun to congratulate guys and see, get their responses back. And we do, from the natural team side, we try to tag players where we can, so that they see that we're talking about them and, have a chance for our fans to see that they can follow those players as well. But I think, Twitter has, I'm a big fan of it. I think it's given fans access into the game more so than they've ever had. And it's really completely changed how teams go about their business. And, you have to have an open avenue for guys, for fans to get to know these guys. And, I think Twitter does that, perfectly. And, I love the fact that there's people who follow me, to hear about baseball. They're also going to hear about my cats and they're going to hear about, the food that I eat. And, you get to really know kind of all about somebody. And so I enjoy following players and, it's always fun to see when they follow me back and, are interested in who I am as well.
And the reason I brought that up is because one of the Royals' better Twitter folks is Brett Eibner. And I wish Mike was here to ask this question because I don't know exactly where he was headed with this. But he mentioned that he wanted to talk about Brett Eibner and what approach preparation that you observed that Brett goes through.
I can't say that I see anything, vastly different from Brett than any other player. I mean, he's a great kid. He's charismatic. He's friendly. He's a hard worker. He cares deeply about the game. He puts his work in. He understands, he's a professional. He very much gets what his job is, and takes a, very serious approach to it. He also, understands that, he had a little, minor injury now, and he understands that he's got to do exactly what's asked of him in order to get back from it. And, he's a great kid. I wish him the very best. I know it's been a struggle early on in his pro career, but, he doesn't have to walk by you more than a couple times. You can see what people see in him. Dude's an athlete. So I hope he can put it together because he's a great kid.
Mike was wanting to ask about Matt Fields. The article he linked to me was from the Blue Rocks, but I'm guessing that he must be currently in Northwest Arkansas. Like I said, I didn't have a chance to look this up. He said that this is a guy, the reason that he was curious about him is we had Anthony Sarantelli on the show earlier this year, and same kind of thing, Sarantelli's been through a lot trying to find his way to the major leagues and kind of has currently stalled out in Triple A's. Not been able to find his way to the majors, but Matt Fields, another same kind of guy. He spent 6 years in Tampa Bay, went to the independent ball, and then he walked away from the game to please his, at the time, his fiance. Now he's back in baseball. Tell me a little bit about this. I can't even say kid. This guy's, 28 years old or whatever. What's it like having a guy that's a little older being part of the team?
He's a smiling kind of guy. He's always happy. He's always upbeat. I haven't seen him play before this year, but I've been told that, he is slimmed down and in really great shape, maybe from where he's been in the past. Again, that's all third party, hearsay. But, when the guy connects, he's hit two balls that, no joke, we're tracking him at over 500 feet. He's hit two home runs this year that have tracked over 500 feet. So, he can hit the ball a long, long way. He still can get tied up with really good off-speed stuff. I'm sure that's been his bugaboo in the past, as it is for, I think, a lot of big power hitters. But he's a great guy to have around. He's a guy willing to do anything. He's got a positive attitude. He's willing to do what it takes to help the team win. And, those guys are good to have around no matter what their age.
Well, I don't have too much more to ask you, but the good thing is, I moved to Flagstaff, Arizona, which most everybody knows that listens to this show because I've probably mentioned it 100 times. But, as part of that, I've been kind of following the Diamondbacks because, I have to be able to follow the local team regardless if I'm a fan or not. And I'm getting together with a couple of guys and I'm going to host a Diamondbacks podcast. So I have a feeling, Eric, that we're not done doing business together yet.
Well, that is tremendous, and I will be excited to get in, and I've got to do my homework to learn a little more about their system because I just don't know it real well right now. But, it's extremely, extremely tough to leave the Royals. 10 years I've been with this organization. I really feel like I'm getting out just before the payoff really hits. And, that's really, really is tough for me. The Diamondbacks are a great up and coming organization themselves. And I'm excited about the opportunity to, toil at the AAA level and see what I can do.
Well, in the West, for the Diamondbacks, seems much more open than a lot of people thought it was going to be. The Dodgers were supposed to just run away with it, and if they didn't, the Giants were supposed to be the team that was going to really make a difference. But the Diamondbacks are in serious need of some relief pitching, it looks like, and maybe some offense. So maybe we'll see some of those come out of. Maybe those will be the guys we'll be talking with you about. We'll see what kind of AAA guys they'll be producing at the major league level before long. But you know, the Diamondbacks are a very similar organization to the Royals. They play the small market a little bit, even though Arizona is a huge city. They're not necessarily a huge baseball town, and it'll be interesting to see how your teams there in Reno result in the players that end up in Arizona. Now, you just missed Omaha in Reno. They're there currently right now. And one thing that you said you were leaving in June, are you going to be able to stay at Arvest to take in the AA All-Star game? Because that's coming up this year yet, correct?
I am not. I'm going to leave before that, but I'm heading to Reno where they'll be hosting the AAA All-Star game. So just shy of getting away from an All-Star game, I'm actually going into the biggest minor league All-Star game that there is. So I'm excited about that. And funny thing you mentioned about Omaha coming in is I actually sent Larry Carter, who's been our pitching coach for a long time. He's Omaha's this year. I texted him yesterday and told him I wanted a full scouting report on how things are going in Reno, so I can find out from a visitor exactly what life is really like down there.
Well, that's fantastic, and I mean everybody here at the show, and especially me personally, I'm super excited for you. I mean, anytime anybody that we know and that's been part of our world gets a promotion is totally cool. It's weird though, because when we started this show, we had two executives that we talked to, and it was you and Rob Crane, and then Rob Crane leaves to go to, of all places, the Yankees organization. Mm-hmm. And if anybody's followed our show for a long time, or you know Rob, he's a Boston Red Sox guy, and we did some interviews from his office during a rainout of the opening day of Werner Park, and I'm sitting in this office, and it's just, of course, it's got a lot of Royal stuff, and then it's just got all this Red Sox stuff throughout, and it was kind of surreal because he was still being a fan while being a member of another organization. I would love to see his office now, because I can't imagine there's Boston stuff all over. How much did you deal with Rob as minor league general managers?
I've dealt with him a little bit when he was in Omaha, and we've probably actually had a few more conversations since going to Scranton. And last time we had a real nice talk was winter meetings. We just, you know, walking around, we ran into each other and got to catch up real, you know, for a little while there. But I mean, Rob's a great guy, and you know, he just turned 31, you know, running a AAA club. So he's an up and comer. You know, if he hasn't already made it, he's an up and comer in this game as well. And now that he's got a year head start on me at AAA, maybe I can pick his brain a little bit, see any differences.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting on seeing you guys both now in AAA and how much of a difference it makes in those teams. Well, Eric, thank you very much for spending about 20 minutes here with us today. And it's really sad that this is the last time we're going to be getting together to talk about the Naturals. But maybe, you know, like I said, obviously I'll be doing this Diamondbacks thing, and maybe I'll give you a call, you know, and we'll talk about what you saw from Omaha as they came through, as you should see them a couple of times a year still being in the Pacific Coast League. So thank you very much for everything you've done for the Royals organization, and thank you for the several times you've been on this show.
No, my pleasure. I'm happy to do it anytime. And, like I said, it's a really, really tough thing to leave the Royals. And I'm, like Rob, a fan of the Red Sox, I'm going to be a fan of the Royals for a long time and definitely rooting no matter where I am.
Well, follow him on Twitter at Eric Baseball. I don't see any reason that that'll be changing. So definitely check out Eric on Twitter and everything that goes with that. And Eric, we're going to be following your career, and maybe this will help me be a little more of a Diamondbacks fan because I'll be following the Reno stuff a little bit closer.
Well, that's great. We'll keep talking.
Yep. Have a great day, sir.
All right. Bye now.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, And that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air-conditioned. And the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Badette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I didn't mean to turn it off there. Let me see if I can bring it back in here. That was something special.
You want to start that over and just fade it out?
Well, it's not fading right on this. We'll just let it go. Shoot, everything else we do, it always kind of screwed up, so we'll just go with that.
That's funny.
But Mike had said in one of the emails, I said, well, what do you want to talk about today? He goes, well, let's talk about Zoot Suits. And I said, okay. And so then instantly I had to go find that in my collection and throw it in for today. And
there it is.
And get it all squared away. And there it is. So
there it is.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson. I'm joined by Michael Engel. You've already been listening for about 20-some minutes. I don't know. I haven't edited it down yet. And we talked with the wonderful, always forthcoming Mr. Eric Edelstein, whose name I'm probably still saying wrong, but he didn't correct me, so I'm going with it. And he's going out of the Northwest Arkansas and heading into the Reno Aces, which ironically, like we said in the interview, is the Diamondbacks AAA team. So congratulations to him. But I mentioned on Twitter today that he is about as old as this show goes, because I couldn't find it for sure, but if I remember right, Mike, and you can correct me on this, but wasn't he like episode 2 or 3 or within those first 8 that aren't even downloadable anymore, I think was the first time that Eric was on. I noted that he was pre Jeff and and
Ned.
Fake Ned, because, I mean, he really went that far back with us. So that meant a lot to us, and I know I'm kind of babbling about this, but that was something that was important to us. So
he's earned the crap out of that job. I mean, he does a great job. He's one of the – always gets recognized as one of the top minor league executives out there. I mean, he works really hard. So, I mean, can't be anything but happy for him to get, you know – a new job, new position, new challenges, all that stuff. So, you know, and it's really cool that he takes time out to talk to goofballs like us.
And that's what I had said in the interview. Mike, of course, hasn't had a chance to listen to the interview because I literally recorded it like an hour ago, and Mike just got off work, so we're recording the rest of this. But I asked him a couple of questions on Mike's behalf, and I did a crappy job at it because I wasn't exactly sure where you wanted to go with them, so you can listen to me fumble over those later. And but he did mention in it that he's going from being general manager to becoming COO of the Aces, because it's a bigger company, mm-hmm. and so it has more positions. So he's doing a lot of the same work, just a different title. But they do have a general manager as well, and apparently he's like a 30-year baseball guy. And so, I mean, I'm sure that they let him know before they made this move that they were going with Eric. But Eric mm-hmm. was one of the top 40 under 40 at one point, and he, you know, 2008 Texas League Executive of the Year. He was minor league executive. I think he said it was minor league executive of the year, if I remember right, for the Royals. I mean, like you said, everybody knows him. He mm-hmm. talked about calling David Glass and letting Mr. Glass know that he was done with the Royals, and they have a great relationship. And he talked a bit about some of the other Royals folks he's dealt with, including J.J. Piccolo, who, as I mentioned in the interview, is a great friend of the show and an all-around really good guy. And regardless of what you think of any of the Royals front office, he is a truly good person. I'm going to pause here to make sure that we're recording, which we are, because never can check that enough, and I hadn't checked it. So, Mike, it's been an interesting week for the Royals here. Nothing too big. They're winning and losing. They're actually playing like a regular baseball team. It's no 12-game losing streak to get excited about like a year ago this time.
Right.
They're not leading the division anymore, but still leading the wild card. Still, I think their magic number, when I checked yesterday, was like 134. So, I mean, they're still leading something that would get them into the playoffs if they can continue to play the way they are now for a full season. You know, there's definitely some areas they need to pick up. And
yep.
I'm at work for most of the games now, and like today's game started at 4 o'clock. It's the 8th, and it started at 4 o'clock. And I always forget when they play on the East Coast that the game starts early.
Oh yeah.
And I'll look down, I'll be like, oh, it's the third inning. Crap. You know, we'll go back and watch the game and edit commercials and what have you, and catch up. But I'm getting to a point. I know you feel this way too from some of the email exchanges we've had, that it's almost hard to be on Twitter during these games anymore. And of course, without Twitter, we wouldn't be anything. And so we love everybody that's on Twitter. And you know, people like to accuse me of trying to say that a fan's supposed to be a certain way, and that's never what I'm out to do. And you can be a fan any way you want, but boy, oh boy, just from some of the exchanges I've seen from the people that are in our mailing list, it's pretty crazy out there right now. What's going on Twitter as far as you take it, Mike?
Well, it seems almost like people forget that baseball is a six-month season of 162 games. And so, you know, every win is a huge win. And you know, you get to a point where the Royals won 4 games in a row there, and they were 17-10. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. It felt great. It felt like, you know, some things were really building. Pitching staff was doing really well. In some spots, some hitters were heating up. And, you know, so it's understandable to get excited about that. I mean, for God's sake, I mean, the team was in first or a half game out of first, depending on what Detroit was doing on that particular day, depending on how badly they beat the Astros on that particular day, at least last week. And so, yeah, I mean, people get excited, and then the Royals lose a game, and it just seems like all that fun, all that, you know, enthusiasm just dies. It just flattens out, and everybody gets angry and upset, and people start sniping at each other. And it's just, you know, teams lose games. You know, the Chicago Cubs, I think it was 1908, they won 116 games, but they still lost 36. You know, so teams are going to lose games. It's not like college football where if you have 2 bad games, your season's sunk and you're looking at, you know, an early December bowl game. You know, it's not college basketball where, you know, one or two bad conference games can really take you out of the running. It's baseball. I mean, everybody's going to lose games. You know, you can lose 72 games and still win 90. So I think there's just a lot of overreaction. Now, in some cases, I think a lot of it was kind of built off of Monday's game, which was very winnable. And I think 9 times out of 10, the Royals win that game. This would be, of course, the James Shields game where he goes, you know, you had a no-hitter through, what, 6.1 innings or something like that, and then ends up giving up a hit. Later on, you know, he goes through 8 innings, strikes out 9 guys, you know, looks dominant, 102 pitches, and they replace him with Greg Holland, you know, which I don't think that's an outrageous move. Maybe it's not ideal given the context of it being James Shields, a guy who can routinely, you know, finish off a game. But, you know, Holland at that point had gone scoreless in his last 9 appearances. So, and I said on Twitter, I was like, I'm fine with it. I'm not, you know, not thrilled with it because, you know, I probably, the more I think about it, yeah, Shields probably should have went out there. But, you know, if Holland saves that game, it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to be as upset about it. And, you know, of course, he starts out 2-0 to the first 3 batters, and 3 guys get a hit. And despite their best efforts, the White Sox still managed to tie the game. But even in tying the game, you know, Chris Getz, if he gets that ball cleanly out of his glove, you know, the game's over at second base. So, you know, that, I think, people are going to point to that as a decision from Ned Yost, and his explanation was pretty crappy, so I don't think that helps the situation. And then you get to where the Royals lost last night, on this would be Tuesday, and it's just, you know, I get it. I get why people would be upset about losing games that are winnable, but you know, it doesn't mean that you scrap everything and, you know, you start calling for the manager to get fired. You know, it's still a team that's 17-12 coming into Wednesday night. So I think it's just a little overboard in a lot of cases on both ends. Even, you know, the 4-game winning streak, people are talking about, well, this and this and this. I mean, it's May 8th. You know, there's a lot of baseball still to play.
And they're currently losing, too, as we record this. Who knows where it'll be by the time – the game will be over by the time I get it up tomorrow. But, you know, if they lose tonight, it's going to be a free-for-all out there because that's going to be three straight losses. And I think the biggest thing about Monday's game was it was a perfect not a perfect circle, but it was like just a perfect thing of happenings that of everything that the Royals fans are currently unhappy about. Frenchie played crappy, committed an error that broke up. I believe it broke up the perfect game. I don't think Schilt had any walks at that point. And then he has a catch that, in my opinion, he should have made that gets credited as a hit because they said it was too hard to actually make. And then again, I didn't think that was necessarily a hit. But then, of course, the next inning out, there's a clean hit, and it doesn't matter anyways as far as that goes. But then you go to the late innings, and Ned actually does the thing that most fans would have wanted him to do in years past, and that's, you know, go to the closer that's been pretty dynamite all in all.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, with the exception of, like, the first week of the season, Holland's been nailed. I mean, you look at him in Boston and coming out of that series, the guy was striking out, like, half the guys he faced. I mean, it was ridiculous. He looked even better than at any point last year, and he looked pretty good for most of the year once he got off the DL last year.
And he hasn't necessarily looked that great this year. And honestly, none of the bullpen has. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But
okay.
but staying with where we're at, you know, and then so then your closer comes in. He gives up a run, and the game's tied. And then commits the error. And all of a sudden, you know, the three people in the organization that people hate more than anybody, Yost, Getz, and Francoeur, all of a sudden are on the carpet for things that went wrong. So I think that has a lot to do with the outrage too. And if you look at the way that the lineup is today, where Elliot Johnson's in and Dyson's in for Frenchie, and even if those hits fall in, maybe people are less angry because you don't have the whole mess of things that Royals fans hate right there.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, like, the Royals had chance. I mean, the Royals scored one run on Monday, you know, so you got to look at it from the perspective of if they get another run and it's 2-0, you know, the run that Holland gives up is irrelevant. You know, it's probably going to be able to get out of that inning at that point. So, you know, you can blame the decision, and I get it. You know, it didn't work out. So I get the frustration and being upset about it. But at the same time, if the Royals score any other runs, you know, they win that game. And, you know, they left a guy on. Salvador Perez was stranded on second in the seventh inning. I think they had first and third in the second inning. Pretty sure they left a guy on in the first inning. So, you know, it's you add to that the offense wasn't doing anything in that game. So it ends up being a bigger problem where you've got an offense that isn't performing, plus you get, you know, this great start from Shields that gets, you know, thrown away because the Royals blow it. And, yeah, I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. So it's a lot of stuff going on, and it's a lot that could have been avoided, and there are a lot of different people that could have helped avoid it. So, you know, I get the frustration, but it's just like full-on meltdown mode for a lot of people, and you know, it makes it really difficult to actually have discussions in that situation, which is what Twitter is really there for. And so, you know, it's tough to be on there and really be as engaged and locked in as you want to be, you know, to really enjoy it. So, you know, the Royals will win some games and it'll turn around and then they'll lose some games and there's still going to be some sniping. So, I mean, it's just kind of like any other group of people. You're going to have voices that pop out, and they're not all going to be thrilled with what's going on.
you know, we just need a street ball game right about now. Something to bring everybody back together and something funny, and then it'll all be okay. You know, we did briefly talk about the bullpen struggles. Tim Collins takes the loss on Tuesday. Herrera now has given up 6 home runs. And, you know, the thing about a pitcher like Herrera, it's the same thing we said about Jeremy Jeffers back in when he was up here, is that if you put that ball out there at 99 miles an hour and they make any sort of contact on it, it's gone. I mean, just the, you know, the science of momentum that goes into that. And he's not burning people like he did last year. And so now all of a sudden Herrera is very hittable, ERA over 5 and 6 home runs given up. And looks really, you know, you can't count on him out of the pen like it seemed they could last year. Same with Holland. He seems to be having his weaknesses, couple blown saves. Every closer does it.
Right.
But
there's no closer in the last, like, 30 years that's gone a year without a blown save.
Well, didn't Gagne?
Maybe Gagne. He did. One closer in 30 years.
One closer in our lifetime. I'm pretty sure you're safe to go with that.
Oh, I mean, there you go. I mean, it's going to happen. You know, I don't know. In some ways, yeah, the bullpen's been troubling. I mean, Collins looked really bad last night, and he hasn't looked good in a lot of different spots, especially in, like, spring training. He didn't look great. Holland has been really good aside from the first week, and it's kind of like last year where he was hurt, and he came back, and he was, you know, rock solid the rest of the year. Herrera last year, his first month, like, I think from until April 27th or something like that, he gave up 4 homers. He didn't give up any the rest of the year. So I think if he can turn it around, and, you know, he's 14.1 innings into this year. Last year he threw 84.1 innings. If he can get 70 innings and pitch at the same pace that he did in the last 70 innings last year, his ERA is going to be a little higher, but, you know, just due to where he's starting from. But I think it's going to be something where he's going to be able to get right back on track. The problem that I would start worrying about with him is if he started to walk people, which he isn't doing. You know, he's walking a little bit more, but he's striking out way more people as well. Holland's striking out more people. In fact, the bullpen this year to this point actually has a better ERA, better walk rate, better strikeout rate than the entire year last year. But it's just that these parts stand out. So, you know, I mean, there's stuff to worry about. You want to see them turn it around. Herrera's having some location problems, but for the most part, he's pretty good. You know, he's given up 8 earned runs, 6 homers. So a lot of that is based off of that. He's not going to keep giving up 4 homers per 9 innings the rest of the year. It's just not going to happen. That'll correct itself at some point. So I think he's going to turn around. I think Holland has already shown he's coming around. You know, Aaron Crow's been pitching pretty well, or at least his numbers look really good. Collins, you can kind of worry about. His control hasn't been good at all, but there are options. You know, they could always option him to Omaha, bring up Donnie Joseph. You know, they've got things that they can do there if they needed to. So I don't think that they need to necessarily ride him out. Joseph's not pitching that great either, but, you know, it does give them at least somebody that they can go for. Lewis Coleman's still hanging around down in Omaha, and he's pitching great. So, you know, they've got a lot of arms that they can go after if they needed to.
While we're talking about pitching, do you feel that any of Luis Mendoza's long layoffs there could have had to do with his poor start, or is it just Luis Mendoza being Luis Mendoza, and he's going to be a guy that can be really good, but when he's bad, he's just bad?
Yeah, I think it could be a little bit of both of that. I mean, I've never obviously been a Mendoza fan, but, you know, he had a good spring, and he had a pretty good, bunch of starts last year towards once Danny Duffy went away. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's some of that that can be attributed to, you know, he's sitting on the bench, he gets skipped, you know, he's only made, 3 starts and 4 appearances. So, you know, they skip him. He's a sinker ball kind of guy. He really relies on some of that. And, you know, it can change the way that he pitches because, you know, if he's too strong or if he's got to get the feel back, then, yeah, it can straighten out that ball and he gets hit. At the same time, you know, he's just never been
good. I mean, last year he looked really good, but still finished the year off being pretty much average. So that's kind of his ceiling, is being an average starter. And, you know, if things don't go well and line up right for him, then, yeah, he's going to be a guy who struggles. And, you know, he's given up some more homers, which is kind of rare because he is a sinker baller and gets a lot of ground balls. But yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I am willing to give him a pass and not really go nuts, you know, because he has had some weird circumstances with all these rainouts and things like that where he gets skipped.
Well, I think time will tell with that, and it looks like he might get skipped again. So when it's all said and done, we might be in for another bad Mendoza outing. And then if he has two in a row, then maybe you can put some of it on that and say, hey, you know, this is a guy that needs to pitch on a regular basis because that's where he pitches the best. But, you know, that's all good and fine, but that's not what he's going to ever be. That's not what he's ever going to get, because he's not, you know, frankly, he's not James Shields or Jeremy Guthrie or Irvin Santana, and doesn't deserve to have that respect.
He doesn't get the benefit of the doubt at all.
Yeah, and even for me, outside of Guthrie and Shields, I would even stop there and say if Santana had to have a start skipped, you have to have a start skipped, although he's been great this year.
He's been very good, and he kind of got ripped off of a win in that snow-out game against Tampa.
Yeah, he looked really good in that game. And we'll see how he recovers from only pitching a couple of innings there and then coming back 5 days later. We'll see what happens with that.
I think he'll be fine.
Let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to come right back. And I think we're going to shoot around the minor leagues, and then we're probably going to pick up anything we happen to think about along the way and get out of here. So we'll be right back on the other side. And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, kind of chuckling because as we were coming back in there, Mike was telling me he was hearing a hissing sound, and it was the dishwasher spraying water. And just as we came back in, he goes, and now it's gone because it changed cycles. So if you've been wondering what that sound was in the background, it's the wonderful thing of doing a podcast at home is we had the dishwasher made a visit to the show today. So. Mike, obviously we talked a lot about the Double A team with Eric, and you haven't heard any of that, so I might jump in if you hit on anything that he talked about. But you had several questions for me to ask him there, and I hit all of those. And but you're going to take us around the minors with one player from each of the levels, and take it away.
Yep, I just kind of looked at some of the top performers at each level because, well, I mean, I want to accentuate the positive and. Also, it's really fun to just get excited about prospects. You know, David Lowe is a guy that his name has come up a lot because obviously nobody likes Jeff Francoeur except Dayton Moore. And as I pause while Elliot Johnson hits one to the warning track and the inning is over. As I was saying, David Lowe hitting incredible down in Omaha. He's got a .353 average, slugging .526. You know, he's doing just about everything you can do to say that he needs a shot in the big leagues. The question with him is always, and it always has been, that he doesn't really have one elite skill. So he's kind of that jack of all trades, master of none. So it makes it really difficult to see him as any kind of an everyday player. You know, so that's kind of unfortunate for him because that puts him in a spot where, you know, he's kind of stuck in that Mitch Meyer territory where he's the fourth outfielder. You know, he's a really good defensive replacement, pinch runner, late inning pinch hitter, occasional starter, but he's not necessarily somebody that I think the Royals would ever see that they're going to call up to replace Frenchie or even platoon with Frenchie. So he's in a weird spot, but he's doing everything possible to tell them that he needs at least another look in the big leagues. Then the biggest name this week is Yordano Ventura, who just went crazy. He's pretty much destroying the Texas League. His last two starts, he struck out 10 batters each time. They're starting to increase his pitch count a little bit. They want to keep him around 90 pitches, give or take. So it does rely on him to try to stay, you know, somewhat efficient with his pitches. But he's just got so much stuff that they just can't hit him. His last two starts, he's thrown 11 combined innings. He's given up 3 total hits, no runs, 20 strikeouts, 5 walks. I mean, that's incredible. That's he's doing.
And I talked
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I talked to Eric about that one because that was one of the players you had asked about. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, Eric's not an on-the-field guy, and he's not necessarily a scout. He is a businessman. That's what his job is. But I asked him, I said, you know, just from your eyes, you know, you're Donald Ventura. Can this guy be a 3-4 starter for the Royals, or, you know, and can it be this year? You know, how close is he? And he said, you know, this is a guy that definitely could come up in September and help this club. He's definitely got the build to be a starter. And kind of echoing what you said, Eric had said, you know, that he just is destroying the Texas League. And I think you mentioned last week on the show that he's doing it in a hitting-heavy league. And I think that's really important to bring up, that some of these minor leagues are quite hitting-heavy. So anytime you can get a pitcher that actually makes it to the majors with pretty good numbers, they do really have a good shot, because you look at some of the places that these guys have to play. I mean, if you're in the Pacific Coast League, you have to go to Albuquerque and Reno and
Colorado Springs.
And,
those are, you know, not fun places to pitch.
No, they're altitude-affected, and it makes a big difference. And Texas is the same way. If you go way back on one of our shows to one of the times we talked with Eric, he talked about how there was an unintentional jet stream built into the stadium, and it has turned out to be a ton of home runs for the Naturals and anybody they play for that matter. But so to see what he's been doing for Northwest is pretty incredible.
Yeah, he's given up 4 total extra base hits all year in 6 starts. So he's doing really, really well. And I would say I don't think they'll do it yet, because they still kind of want to get him stretched out to where he can almost routinely go 6 innings. But I do think that at some point towards the end of May, you're going to be, you know, if nothing weird happens, he's going to have a shot to get to Omaha, just because he's earned it. You know, I think it was Jason Parks who said something to the effect of a minor leaguer will tell you when he's ready. And he's definitely telling the Royals that he's ready at this stage. So he's really exciting. You know, there's still questions about if he can be a starter or a reliever. You know, I think he could do well in either role. The value is definitely going to be there if he's a starter, because, you know, if your decision is 170 innings versus 70 innings, you want 170 innings out of him. So, you know, exciting guy there. And his rise has been really great.
And it'll be interesting to see. I think he is definitely the player to watch right now in the minor leagues, and I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see him. He may never even go to Omaha. He may make the jump straight from Double A. It's not unheard of, especially for a pitcher.
It's a jump, but you never know.
It is a jump, but it'll be interesting to see what. It'll be interesting to see what happens to get through that game. So, or get through that. What am I trying to say? Hell, I don't even know anymore. Get him up to the major leagues.
Yeah. Another really interesting pitcher, and this is in Wilmington, is Kyle Smith. And we brought him up a couple times. You know, he was a 2011 draft pick, 4th rounder, out of high school. He's already an A-ball. He's pitching really, really well. And he's pitched well as a Royal just in general. But this year in high A, 6 starts, he's got a 2.01 ERA. He's striking out 10 batters per 9 innings. You know, had another really great start the other day. So he's just solid. He threw, you know, 6.1 innings of 2-hit ball, gave up no runs. He's another guy to kind of keep an eye on. He's probably not going to get a jump up to Double A anytime soon, just because he does have a lot of inexperience. And you know, the jump from Wilmington, which is, you know, Frawley Stadium out there, is, they call it cavernous because it's huge. It's very, very pitcher friendly. And then to move to Arvest, which, you know, as we just talked about, is in a tougher league for pitchers, plus is, you know, much more home run and offense friendly just in that stadium. You know, I don't think they'd make that jump too soon. So we'll see what they want to do with him. And they're not really in a hurry to have to push him. He's kind of one of those second-tier pitching prospects that
maybe has some upside to get into that tier with Ventura and Kyle Zimmer and a couple other guys. So we'll see where he ends up by the
end. It goes back to what we talked about with Jason Adam. You're talking about making that jump. I mean, look how good Jason was in Wilmington. If you take out wins as a stat, which is I see more and more why people hate that stat. I mean, if you take
especially
wins out
in the minor leagues, because a lot of times pitchers, they'll send them out there and tell them, hey, you get five innings, go work on this. You know, and the minor leagues aren't about getting wins. If you can, great. But, you know, it's kind of like I think we've talked about it in the past couple of years as the Royals have been, looking at September and things like that. You know, if they needed a guy like Clint Robinson a couple years ago, even if the team's in a playoff race, they're going to pull him up. You know, if the Royals needed him at the big league level, they would make that move just because it's all about the big league team. So, you know, the wins are kind of a nice side effect. You can kind of measure some stuff from that. But especially pitcher wins, yeah, that's tough. You know, unless pitchers go in nine innings every time out, there's a lot of stuff that they just can't control, or that the organization will kind of build in so that it just doesn't happen that they get a lot of wins. It's kind of weird, but yeah, the pitcher win stat. Yeah, I'm with you there. That's a tough way to measure who's legit.
And if you look at the errors that get occurred in the minor leagues too, I mean, that's why they're minor leaguers. That was a lot of Jason's problem last year, was a lot of the players behind him were just dropping balls left and right. And so his ERA was sweet. And then, his other stats went well, but you saw these wins were not there and in fact, he took a lot of losses because of that.
Yeah, because he's the pitcher a record when, you know, if they give up three errors behind him, his ERA is going to look fine. But yeah, I mean, that costs him pitches, which can cost him some innings, which, you know, just leaves him out there. So it's a weird environment in a lot of ways for a pitcher.
But one of the two Kyles looking good so far. So
it'll be interesting. Kyle Zimmer's not doing too bad.
It'll be interesting to see as these guys come up, because they're both, you know, guys that people are really watching, and it'll be fun to watch Facebook fans confuse Kyle Zimmer and Kyle Smith later on in their careers.
It'll probably happen.
Oh, it's going to happen. That's a gimme. Moving on, who you got next?
Last guy I want to talk about is Miguel Almonte, which is, by this point, I think people are starting to kind of learn his name a little bit more. Last year, he came out of nowhere. This year, he's been really good. His last two starts, he's given up one run, six hits. He's thrown 12.2 innings, struck out 16. So, you know, he's another guy who's just doing really well. And we talked to Jason Parks, and he had him in his top 10 prospects and could have easily had him maybe in his top 5. I mean, he's just a pitcher with a lot of upside. He's pretty raw, but, you know, he just turned 20 years old and is pitching well in A-ball. So he's exciting, too. He's going to be a good strikeout kind of guy. Control looks like it's going to be fine. And, you know, he can still improve. He's still improving, you know, every start. So another really exciting arm, a couple years away, but, you know, he's in full season ball, so that's the first step you got to make to start, you know, rising up the ladder.
On Almonte, that's somebody that Parks, you mentioned it just now, but Parks had mentioned it a few days ago, talking about somebody that he thinks he's the best pitcher in the Royals system, which says a lot, because this system's still pretty full of pitching. Hitting's not looking so hot, but pitching is definitely there. But he just remarked 23 hours ago that Royals rising prospect Miguel Almonte was sharp again tonight, ran into some trouble in the seventh, bat missing stuff, very easy release. I wish I could find the one where he replied to somebody, and it was to do with Almonte as well. But regardless, it definitely backs what you're saying, and definitely a player to watch for those of you that like watching the minors.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool because one of the guys on Kings of Kauffman, Clint Riddle, actually lives in Lexington, so he's able to go out there and pretty much see these guys every time out. So he gets to, you know, if they're in Kentucky, he can go out and watch Bubba Starling and Miguel Almonte if he's on the mound, and Adalberto Mondesi and Humberto Arteaga, and all these pretty cool names that they have down there to down in Lexington, which is really nice.
know, it's nice to get his input, somebody who can actually get out there and take in those games. So, you know, this definitely he'll be giving some periodic updates of things. Meanwhile, Alex Gordon just homered.
Did he really? Yep. Good. Maybe they'll actually pull this game out. Man, a three, you know, and that actually is a nice transition there. A three-game losing streak, like we said early on, could make Royals fans go into a total big mess. But our good friend David Lowe, not the player in AAA that we talked about, but the fan, he wrote in again this week. He's just a little sad. And I kind of agree with him. He wrote kind of a long email, so I'm not going to read it all, but I'm going to summarize it. He was bummed about the loss, and you know, he wondered about Ned pulling Shields early. And, it, you know, I even told Megan that night when he did that. I was like, oh, man, I wish he'd leave Shields in and just have somebody ready to go in case he gets into trouble. But, you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how that kind of loss is what sends a team like the Royals into a six-game losing streak, and he just wishes Ned would quit affecting the outcome of the games. And I think that's a little much when referring to the Shields game. And he even mentioned about why not leaving Davis in one more inning because he was cruising, but
he wasn't really.
We've crucified Yost for leaving a pitcher in one inning too long or one batter too long. So yeah. I have a lot of problem, you know, jumping on the other side now and saying, oh, yeah, that was definitely the wrong move.
Right.
I'm not saying it was the right move, but that's why he's a major league manager and we're not. But he does mention that Kansas City has he thinks that they have to have the lowest first base, third base slugging combo in baseball, and it can't continue for the Royals to have any hope. And I meant to bring this up earlier, you know, just – the old thing that the offense warms up as it gets hotter outside, but at some point these guys have got to get warm in the winter too, or in these cooler months, because it's just going too long, and you're really expecting way too much, one, out of the bullpen, as we talked about earlier, and two, about these starting pitchers that have been lights out, but they're not going to be like that every game, and you really do need to get these guys four or five runs a game, and there's just too many games where the Royals aren't doing that. He was just upset about the loss, and it thinks it's crazy that Shields has such a good attitude about it, and just needed to vent. And David, you know I'm always good for a venting email, and we'll typically bring it up on the show if I remember. And I guess for me, Chris Fake Ned said the other day he was buying in. He was all in on the Royals because during that winning streak and everything, kind of like you were talking about with the overreaction. And me, you know, I'm always Susie Sunshine when it comes to the Royals, and I get called out for it on a regular basis. And you know, but I get down on them too, and I call them out when they're not doing right. And
well, yeah.
I think I'm finally in line with Kevin Scobie on what he said that you just can't get too high on this team, or for that matter, too low on this team this early. And it's really going to be Memorial Day when we can really start to get excited. And this is why, because like you said, it's a long season, and here we are, you know, on the edge of a three-game losing streak. If the Royals don't pull this one out, you know, now down 2-1 as we record this, if they don't pull this out, you know, it's going to start being rough because the Yankees are coming to town. And I mean, sure, the Yankees aren't what they used to be, but they can still play some ball. They're not the Astros. They're not Miami. You know, they're a good baseball team. They're a Major League Baseball team. And Kansas City's always, you know, had a little bit of trouble with the Yankees. So, at least it's at the K, and you know, what was it last year that they swept them or nearly swept them, I think. I'm remembering off the top of my head.
Did
they take
two out of three? I don't remember.
It was good. I remember that. I remember it was good, and I wasn't there because I was still working overnights for Perceptive at the time. So, you know, I just think we all got to keep a level head right now. But you're a fan, so you can do what you want, and I may just laugh at you.
Yeah, I mean.
That's your prerogative.
There were a couple comments on a thing that I wrote, and I wrote this thing in, like, April 23rd, so I wrote it, like, 2 weeks ago, and it was about, you know, some stuff about Bubba Starling, and the question that I brought up was, would they have been better off selecting Anthony Rondon? You know, Bubba Starling was the 5th overall pick. Anthony Rondon was the 6th overall pick from the Washington Nationals. And Rondon, at the time, that same day, was making his major league debut. You know, he went to college, so you know, he's ahead of Bubba Starling, but he's a guy who can play second. He's a guy who can play third. And at the time, Mike Moustak was hitting about 141. So the idea was that, okay, would the Royals have been much better off taking Rondon, who,
you know, did have injury questions, but, you know, a lot of people thought if he could stay healthy, he'd be legit. And, you know, that would give them an alternative now to where they could put him at third base and send Moose down. Well, you know, it's like 2 weeks later and someone comments, well, how, you know, I can't believe you're being this negative about the team. They're 17-10. You know, obviously, this was before Monday's game. And then somebody else said about the same thing. And I just had to kind of step back and be like, have you read anything else that I've written? Because, I mean, I find sometimes that I'm too easily an apologist for some moves, you know, or try to see, you know, the bright side or at least the rationale. But above all, I'm a fan just like everybody else out there. And, you know, I don't think that I have to be positive at every step of the way, you know, just because I say that I'm a fan. I can just as easily, you know, critique the bad moves and the bad players. And, you know, I think that's perfectly valid. You know, it doesn't have to be all positive all the time.
And sometimes the bad is the best part, because if you have somebody that does it right, like if you, for example, you know, I always go back to a bit of man crush on Kevin Scobie. I love the way he writes and what have you. And his Monday morning rants used to be a must read for me at work. And I was disappointed the weeks he wouldn't do one, because he, you know, as he always says, he's not negative. He's realistic. And sometimes he's negative. But we can, him and I can argue about that another time. And it's just, you read some of what he writes, and it's funny because it is the tortured fan within all of us. And we all understand that part, and there is definitely a place for it. But, you know, there's some people out there that I've said before on this show that their whole being exists because the Royals are bad. If the Royals were good, it'd be much harder for them to have a following. And so those folks, in my mind, you know, I think part of them wants the Royals to be good, but they know that that's not going to be good for them personally. And I think there's a place for that, but you just got to be balanced. And I try very hard to be balanced. I mean, hell, I was the guy that came in with the lowest estimate for wins of anybody on the Royals podcast site. I mean, you look at the guys over there, and I've always given Clint a hard time for being really negative or too realistic, dare I say. I've always given him a hard time, and he thought the Royals were going to be better than I did this year. So right now, everybody but me is looking pretty good, because they're 5 games ahead of where I wanted them to be. And so, you know, I'm pretty stoked right now. And I know Lesky has talked about the reason that he didn't like the trade initially was because you don't make that trade to be a 500 team or mm-hmm. you know, an 87 win team. You do it to be
a 92 win team
and a playoff team.
Yeah.
And so if that happens, then so be it. Hey, if you want to check out a fun stat line, because I can only imagine what this is going to look like by the time you hear this show, but check out the Twins-Boston game on the 8th of May. It's 11-5 in the middle of the second. Twins are winning. Nobody brought pitching.
Is that a Little League game?
I thought it was a football game, maybe. I thought maybe it was a Patriots-Vikings preseason or something. But, yeah, second inning, 11-5. The Twins put up 4 in the first, 7 in the second, and Boston countered with 5 in the first and are coming up to bat in the second. And Boston has 5 runs on 5 hits. The Twins have 11 runs on 9 hits. So good to see that they brought a good pitching matchup for this game. I was trying to – I mean, it's awful. It's really bad. I'm trying to look up it had an add-on and I couldn't get down to the pitching, but it looks like Boston has already went to the pen, but the Twins have stayed with their starter apparently, who is Hernandez, and so he's still in the game in the second inning after giving up 5 runs. But I guess, you know,
and if he gets to 5 innings and the score stays the same, he's going to get a win.
And it's, you know, and it's
there you
ridiculous,
go.
But
right
Webster
back.
Just got smoked, pitched 1.2 innings, 6 hits, 8 runs, all earned, 3 walks,
really?
2 strikeouts, gave up 2 home runs. Hernandez has given up 1 home run. And,
that's crazy. Webster, the Royals faced Webster and hit 3 homers off of him. And he's really like a, you know, half the balls in play or ground balls, at least in his minor league track record. So it's kind of strange.
DeBron came in. He gave up 3 hits, 3 runs, all earned, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. In his 10th of an inning. So, yeah. Did you have anything else Royals related while I looked up something on Hernandez
The Royals are throwing the ball all around. You talk about minor league stuff or little league stuff. That's just what they did.
Right on cue, right?
Just right on cue. Bad throw from Alcides Escobar, then a bad throw from Tatars, then another bad throw from Escobar.
I would really like Hosmer to stop doing the swipe.
He has.
It used to be. Well, he did it the other day, or maybe he was trying to field a ball cleanly and didn't. It looked like a swipe, and it made my skin crawl.
Yeah, I'm with you though. I hate that swipe. But yeah, the other James Shields game, he was really really good on a lot of those plays. So, and especially like the Guthrie game, the Guthrie shutout. He didn't do the swipe at all, and he had a lot of balls that he had to dig out. So, I think he's, at least for right now, out of that habit.
I looked at the wrong guy. You said it was Webster the Royals had placed. This Hernandez for Boston, for the Twins, Pedro Hernandez. Guy hasn't gotten out of the fifth inning in a game yet, it looks like.
Jeez.
This feels like a pitcher that should be on the Royals. I take that back. He pitched five innings in his first start against Baltimore, then 4.1 against the Mets, one inning against Miami. five innings against Texas, 5.1 against Cleveland, and I think that's all he's done so far in May. He's 1-0 on the year with a 3.92 ERA. How he only has a 3.92 is beyond me, but he definitely has not gone late into games by any means. I was going to see if I could pull this other one up here real quick, but it's being stubborn. So it doesn't matter. It's not our team. It's not our problem. Thank God.
Right.
You know, how many times was it that we were the ones talking about, you know, somebody coming in and getting pulled after one inning because they just couldn't do squat with it? So anything else you got, Mike?
And just wait until you see the highlights of this game.
I don't think I'm going to watch. You know, I always try to go back and watch the condensed games on at least the condensed games on MLB TV. And if I'm not here or doing something like this, you know, during the show and games like this, I'm just like, you know what? I can let this one pass. Now, if the Royals come back and win it, then I might come back and watch it and go, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, this is only Alan Webster's second start for the for the Red Sox, and he did play Casey,
yep.
Didn't get a win, pitched six innings, five hits, three runs, two earned, both home runs. His two earned runs were both home runs. He hit one batter, walked a guy, had five strikeouts, and then hit this game. So definitely not the year he's looking for either, but he's obviously, I don't think, a regular starter for Boston either. So we'll see how this game ends up.
Yeah.
It's quite the sight right now. So, anyways, I think we're going to get out of here. That's about an hour's worth of talk between the interview earlier and us two babbling on. So, for Mike Lingle and for Eric Edelstein of Northwest Arkansas, best of luck to him. We really like him, and we're really happy that he was able to get something bigger in his career. For all of us here, you know, enjoy the games. Try to have fun, guys. It doesn't have to be doom and gloom. This team's a lot better than anything we've seen in the last 5 years. So
oh, yeah.
Hang in there. But until next week, go Royals.